Hello and welcome to We're All Gonna Die and Other Fun Facts, a semi-regular, occasionally amusing, and rarely funny series of conversations on a random topic. This episode is entitled, You Can't Get to Heaven Until You Spend Some Time in Hell. And it's about, about the new Bill Toms and Hard Rain featuring the Soulsville Horns LP, Good For My Soul. And it's a lyric from one of the songs, which we'll talk about in my Geek Love session that's about to happen later. But our guest for this episode is someone who knows a little something about the new Bill Toms and Hard Rain featuring Soulsville Horns LP, Good For My Soul, Mr. Bill Toms.
Hi, Matt.
Hi,
it's
Bill.
It's good to be here.
It's good. Thank you for being here. You've accomplished the podcast hat trick.
Yeah. Yeah. What do you call that?
The trifecta?
The trifecta, maybe? Yes.
You've hit the trifecta, yes. The hat trick.
Right.
Thank you so much for coming back.
Thank you.
And been doing this. And yeah, let's get to it. Mm-hmm. I want to talk about this great new record you've done.
We're excited, yeah.
It is an exciting record. I mean, you were here to talk about Memphis, mm-hmm. and Deep in the Shadows.
Right.
And it seems like there's this musical evolution and growth and...
Yeah, and it's kind of interesting that I've done, this is my third podcast with you for these three records, because I think this is the bookend of Memphis, you know, and this record, you know, and we've worked with Will Kimbrough on all three of these records, and so, yeah, there's a narrative through that, not to say that I write narratives a lot. I usually write moments in time, but I think by putting it all together, you can see that there's a narrative running through these three albums. So.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think there's like an aesthetic unity.
I think so. Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Trying to get to that point taking the music to a rhythm and blues soulful place that sometimes is forgotten, you know, and it's basically where my first love is and my first introduction to music as a kid, other than the Beatles. I think I had older sisters during the 60s, and all the music I heard was, you know, Stax, Atlantic Records, Motown, you know. So that's kind of where it all started, you know, Marvin Gaye.
Yeah,
and that's
absolutely.
Where I, you know, subconsciously is what I hear in my head a lot.
So. Yeah, I that's fantastic and interesting. In a weird way, it's almost this strange thing where we all just kind of become ourselves.
Right.
In a really weird way, right? That
right.
genesis of that kid listening to those records.
Mm-hmm.
And here you are, we won't say how many years later,
right.
making those records.
Yeah, well, I don't
say
well,
I mean,
not
say that, but I mean...
But yeah, I mean, I think the influences, you know, sometimes they're a little bit distorted. I think, you know, a lot of people would listen to me and see my history and say, oh, they need a rock and roll guy, which is true. But there's also that part of me, even when I was with the House Rockers and I co-wrote a few songs, you know, I co-wrote songs with Joe Grushecki. I mean, and they were usually based on soul music. I mean, I could name a few. Soul Survivor is one that comes to my mind. But,
mm-hmm.
you know, it was always part of what I did. And so these three records and really combining all the influences of American music in my mind, I mean, in my soul, I guess, is where it's all coming out from, you know.
Yeah, and I think for me, this encaptures, I think, what's really fascinating about your music, and especially this era of your music, mm-hmm. these last three albums, is this, you know, you said it, this sort of uniquely American music that tells this uniquely American story, which I think is, you know, the thing about the American story, right, it's always in the process of revision.
Right.
And here we are at this moment in history, mm-hmm. where maybe are we going through this sort of national gut check moment,
mm-hmm.
where it's like, well, who are we anyway? And
right.
I think these records are like perfectly slotted for that.
Right.
You know, to tell that story and to tell that narrative.
I believe, you know, if you look at it, I mean, if, you know, and I don't separate the lyrics from the music. I try to, you know, wrap the lyrics around music that will paint the picture of what we're doing. And if you look at, you know, the era of what I would consider the great soul era, mm-hmm. of the mid, late 60s.
Absolutely.
That time period, of course, was that moment in time where we thought things will change, whether they were going to change for the better or not, nobody knew,
you know,
but they were changing, something's going on in the air.
Yeah.
And these songs were written, this song for this last record, Good For My Soul, were written with that in mind. I mean, it was written around this very, very violent ideologies of you know, that we heard in you know, within the presidential candidates and the elections and all the things back and forth. I mean, there was just so much anger.
Yeah.
You know, that I needed to you know, to give hope to this whole thing somehow.
Yeah.
Within myself, and that's just for me.
Yeah.
So hopefully somebody else will understand what's going on, you know.
I think they will. I think when they hear these songs, and I think also, I mean, part of also the live show that you guys put together, that's so fantastic and so joyous. And what I think is so interesting when you're saying about separating the music and the word, not separating the music and the words, is I think there are these great sort of collisions in these songs, as much as we're talking about this sort of retro style. That these really interesting forces are hitting at the same time that you have, you know, these songs that have this joyous quality mm-hmm. to them, even as they acknowledge and deal with struggle.
Sure.
I think is so cool.
Sure. Yeah, and I've always tried to, you know, with my music, I've always tried to ask a lot of questions.
Yeah.
Not necessarily answer them.
Yeah.
But ask a lot of questions, because that's what I'm doing all the time.
You know?
I mean, it's just, you know, the greatest thing that you can do as a songwriter is to be honest and to look around you. You know, any writer, any artist, any painter, whatever, if you're honest and you write honestly about what you're seeing and what you're feeling, sometimes it's not pretty, you know, but you've gotta relate that to the audience.
Well, I think it's not pretty, but I think there's, you know, it also, for me, when we talk about maybe kind of American culture or this sort of, you know, American culture versus American nationalism, mm-hmm. you know,
right.
There's love and there's infatuation.
Right.
You know, love, to truly love someone or something, you see all the parts about it and you acknowledge mm-hmm. it and you love it anyway.
Right.
Versus, you know, well, I think we've all seen, and who knows, maybe you wrote a song about at some point in your career, infatuation, mm-hmm. you know, where that couple that, you know, I only see this about this situation. And then, of course, that always implodes horribly, terribly, you know, which is also maybe a little bit of mm-hmm. the problem with the American narrative right now.
Oh, yeah.
Is that you only have infatuation instead of, okay, I see this and this, and I love it the same.
And it's almost like, I don't want to say competitiveness in people. You know, everybody wants to, you know, we want to wave the flag and say, I love America, which is fine.
Yeah.
But that flag does not necessarily represent all perfection.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like you said, I mean, it's infatuation versus love.
Yeah.
And you have to see in that flag or in that representation, you have to see all its faults.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like I'm the best and, you know, it's like that football, you know, it's like they go, like Newt Rockne or something, like I'm the best and we're going to, you know, we're going to win every game. It doesn't work that way.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you think the flag itself, symbolically, right? I mean, 13 stripes, 50 stars. It was about the building of this country.
Sure.
It's not about, you know, it was about the country as a work in progress in that way, right?
Yeah.
And they literally added stars.
Right. You know? Yeah. Exactly. And it's one of the songs, the last song on the record is Desperate Times. And,
yes.
really, it's about that. You know, it's about seeing seeing the failure, not the failures, but the flaws. Yeah. You know.
Yeah, and the struggle, and I think finding the dignity in that struggle. Right. I think that's the other thing I think that's so interesting about these stories that you tell that maybe, I mean, we talk about, I do want to actually talk about this. Inquiring minds want to know, to what degree are some of these songs autobiographical, and to just what degree are these songs you putting yourself in the mindset of another mm-hmm. person? Because I think all of the songs, there is a richness of character, and there's a richness of perspective mm-hmm. in the songs. And, right. And so how does that work for you when it comes to writing these songs and thinking about, you know, how to put these emotions or these thoughts in?
Yeah, I mean, I think that honesty, you know, and we go back mm-hmm. to that honesty. Yeah. I mean, if you, it's hard for me to fantasize mm-hmm. and write a song. You know, I can, and maybe artists, I don't know, are easy to put themselves in other people's shoes. And I've always mm-hmm. been able to do that. I mean, if yeah. I have a quality, I think that's one of them. I can, maybe too much, because yeah. Then it affects me heavy duty. But I think if you can put yourself into other people's shoes, then you can read about things. And I'm an avid reader, and I love history, and I love you know, the heritage of our not only our country, but our city, our you know, the people here, and my friends and who I talk to, and you know, so I'm getting stories, mm-hmm. you know, and it's easy for me to, it seems to be easy for me to put myself into that. You know, that space that I'm writing about. Absolutely. So in that particular sense, I think all these songs are autobiographical in a sense. I don't know if that's autobiographical, but it's me in my mind being yeah. somewhere that I know about.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's almost like, you know, and I don't want to say they're acting either, but you know, there's that those people who become method actors, you know,
sure.
who you know, put themselves so in the mindset right. of. Yeah, and I think that's an also incredible act of empathy. I think you're right. I mean, that is an incredible act of risk. I mean, there was... Mm-hmm. When I learned method acting in college, there was a great line about how there was a play and the phone rang and the person, the character, was supposed to pick up the phone and say something. You know, that it was important plot information that was supposed to come through that phone, and the phone just rang and rang and rang and rang and rang, and eventually the stage hand stopped ringing it. And at intermission, they... Why don't you pick up the phone? He's, oh, he would have never picked up the phone at that moment. You know, yeah, he right. had to scramble to rewrite the script in the 15-minute intermission to get that information, or the rest of the play would make sense.
Yeah. Wow.
You know, and I think, that's I think that's an incredible risk, and I think that can be heartbreaking if you're doing it, or you can go crazy. I mean, you yeah. know, right? Heath Ledger or something. You know?
Right, right. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, but. Yeah, I think as an artist, and, you know, it was just in the New York Times today, August Wilson's Pittsburgh, mm-hmm. they talked about that, and how many of those things are gone? Like, how many of the places that he wrote about yeah. in those plays, in those great plays, mm-hmm. with their tremendous humanity, that don't exist anymore?
Right.
Yeah. And how, you know, also, if you're talking about these as American songs and the American narrative, you know, preserving this idea of America, preserving these people that happens in your songs is so, again, so interesting for me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, are there, you say you're an avid reader, are there books that really influence you as a songwriter?
Yes and no. Yeah, yes, for the simple fact that I read a lot of history, so oh. I'm putting a lot of, myself in historical situations, I think.
Oh, wow.
But, you know, people that write really strong characters, you know, McMurtry comes to mind, you know, and I'm talking about like the Last Picture Show, which I think is one of the greatest books I've ever read,
yeah.
you know, which is just America, you know,
yeah.
it's just so American.
Yeah.
in those characters that went through those series of books that he wrote. So that was a very big influence on me. People like Willa Cather historical fiction writers. I read a lot of that stuff. So yeah.
Oh wow. So actually, can we sample one of the songs? Are we at that point? And so we are going to listen to, or you are going to listen. Well, actually, we are going to listen to it here, but you're going to listen to a better copy of "I'd Be a Rich Man Today," which is track one,
right,
off this new record. And so Let's take a break, or not take a break. It'll be seamlessly edited, I promise everybody.
She cries out for love, tells me I'm no good, smothers me in kisses. Guess I misunderstood. I thought I had her once. She slipped right through my hand. She gave me so much sorrow. I gave her everything I had. And if I had a penny for all the pain, if I had a dime for all the rain, if I had a dollar every teardrop, I'd be a rich man today.
I'd be a rich man.
God. She said she gonna leave me, take my new Cadillac. I said, wait now, baby, I was only borrowing that. And when we make love, she says, what do you call that? She said, I'll be back in a minute, baby. I ain't seen her in a month and a half. Oh, and if I had a penny for all the pain, if I had a dime for all the rain, if I had a dollar for every teardrop, I'd be a rich man. A broken heart, a piece of my soul. These lonely nights are leaving me cold, and all I do is cry. Oh, cry, cry, cry.
Again, so that was "I'd Be a Rich Man Today" off of "Good for My Soul." Speaking of not remembering,
right. Last I do the week, same thing with my own stuff.
Yeah. Last week I couldn't get the title of the book we were promoting. Right. So now I can't even. I only listened to this album like twice today. So anyway. So that was, and again, I think people now can hear. I mean, that captures for me the sound, but also, I mean, there's an incredible humor. You know, that song could be a dirge.
Right.
It could be a joyless dirge.
Sure. It's you know, a blues song. It's a blues song.
Yeah.
So, I mean, do you do blues? Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, it's a blues. I mean, it's a blues record, but I mean, it's. You know, the funny thing about this record is, not the funniest thing, but how it narrates itself, is that if you listen to Memphis, the first song on Memphis is I Won't Go Back to Memphis.
No more. Yeah.
Okay. So this album here is, he's going back to wherever, he's away from Memphis. Mm-hmm. Now he's got this woman that, you know, he just can't seem to bottle, you know.
Yeah.
She's just so crazy. You know, again, these strong women characters, the McMurtry characters that come into play again. And now, the next song after this opening track is I'm Going Back to Memphis,
because
that's where, you know, and it's, I don't know if it's a metaphor, but I mean, it's, you know, to me, Memphis is the center of the universe when it comes to music and it comes to blues and it comes to rock and roll and rhythm and blues and soul music. Memphis is the... You know, rockabilly. I mean, that's where
it's the spiritual home,
spiritual spot. You know, so I don't know if that's a metaphor for anything, but that's.
I mean, it sounds like. I mean, it sounds like too. I mean, again, as you work sonically, and we should probably talk about the band in a minute here.
Yeah.
Sonically, with all of these, you know, different influences, different pieces. I remember the last podcast you said about, you know, the Clash and London Calling, and I was like, "Whoa, dude!" You know, like all of that's in there, you know. And so I think it's interesting the way in which this album has a richness to it, because it has all these collisions between struggle and optimism, and America and history and the present. And
exactly,
you know, so can we talk about who's in the band? Because well, you know, this isn't just the Bill Tom show, you know.
No, it isn't. No, it isn't. And no, this is a great band, actually.
Yes, it is.
It's a fantastic band. My good friends, Bernie Herr on drums, I've played with for years. On bass guitar is Tom Ballantyne. Tom Briding plays the guitar. Phil Braunz plays the saxophone. Steve Binsberger plays the piano and the organ and all the keyboard parts. And that's the bass band. And Steve Graham is on the trombone.
Mm-hmm.
And J.D. Chasen is playing the trumpet on this recording. And it's you know, that's the Soulville Horns, you know, right there. So.
Yeah, and there's a mighty powerful live unit, so we should plug, right? So you do have some album release shows coming up.
Right.
Yes. First one is, why does Columbus get you first? Why?
Because they had the open date.
Okay. I don't know. Makes sense to me. Yeah. Makes sense to me. So any listeners in Columbus in the Ohio, you know, we'll have links to all this stuff. So 10/13 at
Natalie's in Columbus, Ohio.
Oh,
at 9:30. I think the show is at 9 o'clock, maybe the show starts. Yeah.
You know. And Columbus again, there's a city that's also going through this Pittsburgh thing, whatever.
Yeah.
You know, just bulldoze history and put up, you know, luxury trendy condos everywhere you see.
Right.
You know, which and so for those of us in Pittsburgh, 10/20 and 10/21 at Clazy, you guys, it's such a big important record. You get two.
Yes.
You get two release shows.
Yeah, because we couldn't stop, you know. It's just we gotta keep. No, I don't know. It's a smaller room for one thing, and we wanted to give the opportunity to people to hear the band. And Mark Reisman's opening up the show.
Oh.
Both shows, both nights, October 20th and October 21st. So it'll be fun at Club Cafe.
Yeah, and that is a nice small room. I think there's a tremendous intimacy.
It is, and it's in the that sound room. The sound is very good, you know. And yeah, the intimacy is great, and that's what I like.
Yeah. And so, and all of these pieces. And so Bernie is, so can we talk for a second about Bernie?
Sure.
Who is Bernie Herr? Because I think Bernie is himself a fascinating story, and I think a great example for all of us kids out there.
Sure, Bernie. Bernie played for years in bands back in Harrisburg, along the East Coast, the Steel Pier shows, and he played in soul bands. He played at the Apollo Theater. He's got recordings out with the Soulville Horn or the Soulville All Stars. That's where the Soulville Horns came from. But yeah, as a matter of fact, Get Hip Records released the Soulville Records collection some years back, which is a fantastic group of songs, a group of artists, including the Soulville All Stars, who played with a lot of these folks, but they had their own band as well. And then, you know, Bernie started playing jazz, and he was a percussion player. And when I first met him, he came in and started doing percussion work for the House Rockers. And this is 30 years ago. And he hadn't played drums for 20 years. When he asked me, he said, you know, he says, I was looking for a drummer, and he says, let me play the drums. And I knew he was a good drummer, but I didn't know, you know, I said, well, Bern, I mean, you know, let's see how it goes. You know, I can't just say yes. And one of the things I like about his playing is it's the simplicity. It's easy to sing to. You know, it's a throwback to those big band drummers. You know.
Yeah, he's got that swing to it.
Yeah,
you know?
It's very swing oriented, and that's I think Bernie Herr may be one of the reasons. One of the main reasons why these last three records were written how they were, because it was easy for me to write these songs knowing that the groove, swing is going to be there. You know, it's and very rarely do I have to say play it this way. You know, he just feels it and plays it, and we try not to get too complicated after that. You know, and that's. With these rhythm and blues songs and soul songs like that, he's very proficient. Astute,
yeah.
But I mean, you know, I mean, he's not going to play any Yes songs or you know.
Would you want that?
No, you're going to get no drum.
That's a rip on Prague. No, but come on.
You're not going to get any drum solos from Bernie. So
yeah.
But he works perfect in this music that I'm writing.
Absolutely, and
yeah.
I mean, to think about, too, is all these people that, you know, you're all, you know, I don't know, would you consider this the second act in your career? The third act? The fourth? You know?
I'm still working on the first one, I think.
But I think isn't that a lovely thing? Because I know that's a thing that a lot of my friends are, like, going through. Like, oh, you know, we're getting older, you know, we still make stuff. And yet here, listen, kids, you don't have to stop exploring. You don't have to creating. It's a choice. I mean, what keeps you going? What keeps the motor going on this? You know, because
I mean, to be perfectly honest with you, I don't necessarily know. And I tell my wife this, and my wife is so damn supportive of, and she's actually pushed me when I felt like just saying I've had enough.
You know, but, sweatpants, couch, every night of the week. Yeah, come on, you know, band practice. What are you talking about?
Right.
Yeah.
So she's actually, you know, pushed me. But I talked to her a lot about the fact that I don't feel any different about my upcoming gig or my upcoming record than I did when I was, you know, 25.
Wow.
You know, I don't feel any different. I mean, I feel different the night after a show. A little bit, you know, sore in the knees and the hips and the back. But no, I don't feel any different. And then I read about, you know, writers and painters and, you know, novelists or, you know, anybody that's, you know, and I look at people like Willie Nelson, you know, people that are still just strong artists, you know, just and you know, and B.B. King played until he couldn't play no more.
Yeah.
You know? So I don't see the music that I play as something that is a time restraint to it. Right. And it's not pop music.
Yeah.
I don't play pop music. I don't think so. Maybe that's gives me the freedom to do what I want to do.
Yeah, which is a lovely freedom. Speaking of doing what you want to do, in terms of how maybe your approach to playing is. Playing the guitar is different because, like, I see you play guitar and it looks effortless. Is it? I think
I'm very comfortable doing what I do. I'm comfortable because I don't. I play the guitar like I like to hear it. Doesn't mean that I'm not always reaching for something different.
But yeah.
I've never been in. I've never been a very competitive person, so I'm not playing music or to be better than somebody.
Yeah.
You know, if I play guitar, I'm playing it to wrap it, the guitar around whatever the music that I'm playing. You know, it has to. In other words, I've never listened to a song in my life just to get to the guitar solo.
Yeah.
Never.
Yeah.
You know? And maybe that makes me different. I don't know, but it's just.
Well, I mean, I think, again, you know, if this goes back to the difference between love and infatuation, or maybe me trying to unpack for myself the richness of these songs and of your music, you know, that there's all of these moving parts.
Right.
That kind of just hum beautifully together, you know. And I think it's also something as a lesson for, you know, I have younger friends, and one of the things that I realize now is in some ways my younger friends are a second chance. You know, there's things that I was going through in my 20s that I couldn't help anybody because I couldn't help myself.
Right.
You know what I mean? Right. And in some ways I think about, you know, what I do as a teacher, and even like some of this the podcast is thinking about, you know, well, what can your life become if it's not what it is right now? Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, it's a great example of thinking about how, you know, again, I think, you know, these songs are so well put together. This record is so good. You know, and thinking about, like, how does one get to that point? You know, even if you don't think about it that way, even if you're already thinking maybe mentally about the next record, you know,
right.
what's the next record going to be called? And what are those songs going to become? It, you know, every time I see the band, it like levitates the room, you know, or the band itself levitates, like, you know. And how does it, I don't know, like, how do you get that good? Is that what I'm trying to say? I guess that's what I'm sorry, folks. I was trying to over-intellectualize it. How do you get this good? How do you do it?
You know what?
What does it feel to be? How does it feel to be at this point where you're so comfortable and you can just do it and be it?
Well, you know, I think that, you know, the comfort level is, you know, I'm not very comfortable outside of the stage sometimes. You know, I think that's, you know, any day of the, when I have a gig that night or that day, there's always those anxious moments and those, you know, you're always anticipating the worst.
What but, if nobody shows?
Right, yeah, right, exactly.
The birthday party
what
where
if
no
the,
kids
you know,
come.
The amps all blow up and, you know, I'm standing there in my underwear or something. I mean, just stupid things, you know. But I don't know. I think, you know, what has made me feel more comfortable is as long as I can reach deep into myself and pull as much out of me as I can, you know, that emotion, you know. One of the things that I really like to have people do when they come to our shows is to not only to be able to get up and dance, or, you know, which is a great thing, but I want them to feel emotions. I want them to be able to laugh and cry and feel sad, and then feel hope, you know, and then dance and move it and, you know, shake it. And, you know, there's all these things that I'm looking to do, but the only way for me to do that is to dig into myself and make sure I'm feeling that, because I sure the hell can't make an audience feel that if I don't feel it myself.
Yeah. I mean, it is this peculiar thing, right? The more personal something becomes, sometimes the more universal.
Yeah.
It's like turning into the skid, you
and
know?
That's if you wanted to ask the question about how do you get to that point, I think that's the biggest challenge is you know, kick away the fear of reaching in and pulling out all that that honesty.
Yeah.
You know, on stage, I mean, if you think about it, if you're gonna be scared to take a chance on stage, then you've got a problem.
Yeah, or even I think about, you know, some people even, you know, get famous in the biz, you know, who play a part or play a role or play a, you know,
right.
You know, my great, I think, you know, example for me is like Billy Corgan of the Smashing Pumpkins. You know, is he still really just an angsty teenager? You know what I mean? Yeah, right. You know, but it's like, exactly. Do I have to write these songs, or do I, you know, mm-hmm. some kind of perverted method acting where I have to just be 16 into my 50s or whatever, and right. it's, you know, and then you put out a record called Tear Garden by the Kaleidoscope. You just go, oh Billy, you need a hug. Billy Corgan needs a hug, people.
Yeah.
You know, or needs to go to a Bill Tom show, and that would be nice too. So yeah. I want to talk about some of these other great songs, you know. I mean, things like The Devil's Train and Working, that, you know, have this like real drive to them. And
The Devil's Train was a direct I don't know, use it as a metaphor again, but it's a direct look at, or an indirect look at, personal depression and mental mm-hmm. illness. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, we see that so often, around us, and every family is touched by some sort of mental illness. And so I think that song speaks very loudly about that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And of course, Working, which is
me,
which is you. Yeah, I mean, you.
That's as honest as it gets, right there.
Yeah, Working in the Mill.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. It's still there. So.
It's still there. People are still doing it. And again, I think that's, you know, so much entertainment is escapism and adventure and superheroes and. I don't know why, but, you know, my students at 18 years old, they're still watching Friends. Mm. What a dreadful lost experience in existence they have. They still watch. They're not affording that apartment. Nobody nobody in New York City can afford that apartment. Yeah. No. But, you know, again, that kind of, like, glossy sheen versus, you know, the dignity of real humanity. It's a problem. It's a national problem,
I think. It's a problem because... a great many people, not just working in a mill, but anywhere. I mean, people that are working, getting up every day working, no matter where they may work, and putting in an honest day's work, and not being able to afford to pay their bills.
Yeah.
Not being able to afford to pay for their medication that they may need, or the health insurance, or the groceries, or whatever. And that's...
Or their rent, I mean.
Exactly. You know, so that's another thing that, you know, that moves along all my records, I think, is that there's this great barrage of middle class working poor.
Yeah.
You know, and
that keeps slowly falling off the table.
Yeah,
you know?
That nobody seems to understand. I mean, and you don't have to be, you know, a drug addict, you know, hanging on the street to be a poor person.
Person who lost in this America.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, exactly. So it's, and that's the majority of people, you know, really, is just fighting to pay the bills.
Yeah, and they usually don't get pop songs. You know what I mean, right? I mean, that's...
Right, exactly.
You know, they don't get movies, and they don't get... And I think there is... That's another thing, is, you know, a part of our national maybe emergency that we're living in, right?
Yeah, I mean,
there's this profound alienation that people feel.
Right. Well, we're so obsessed. I mean, Americans are so obsessed with celebrity.
Yeah.
That the celebrities don't know how to write about people that are working just to pay the bills, you know?
Yeah, absolutely, you know. What's that Bill Tom's line? I don't like songs about writing songs. You know what I mean? Which for him, I think, is him saying, you know, song, you know, and he, you know, later in that song, he says, music should sound like Escape, not Rent. Actually, the music.
Who is this known as?
Tim Barry. Tim Barry.
Oh, Tim Barry. Okay.
Tim Barry.
Yeah.
I don't like songs about writing songs, because I guess if you get to a point in your life where that's your life.
Yeah.
You get songs, that's all the songs you can write, is songs about writing songs.
Mm-hmm. Being on the road, you know what I mean?
Being on the road.
it's been done. You
know? It's been done. Yeah. It's been done. And I mean, there's people doing that for a living too. But,
sure, sure.
But
it's all honest. If it's honest, it's honest, I guess. It's just that this is where I'm at right now.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I may be somewhere else next year. I don't know. But right now, this is where I'm at. So.
And yeah, and what a great thing to stay open and be open and all of that fun stuff. And which actually brings me to the title for me, you know, for me, the song that encapsulates the whole album is, and I'm sure Good For My Soul is where the title comes from. But for me, the quintessential Bill Toms lyric is the title of this podcast. You can't get to heaven until you spend some time in hell.
Right. Exactly. Yep. the song is basically about all this, you know, all hell breaking loose around you.
Yeah,
but you need to reach for that higher, that whatever it is for you.
Yeah,
you know that keeps you out of the valley. You know what I mean? It's
I mean, there is a really great, wonderful spirituality to this record too. Mm-hmm. That is,
fascinating.
I mean, that's another another component that we haven't talked about yet.
Yeah, it is. There's
50 minutes in.
Right, there's a lot of spirituality in it, and you know, I always tell people that I'm not a very religious person whatsoever. But spirituality is there, and you know, it runs through all my music in one form or another.
Yeah.
Yeah.
See, in another era, we'd be having this conversation at a monastery. But okay. You think we could be monks, right? The eternal quester? No. No. Okay. Sorry. I was going. Sorry.
Yeah, now you're
going back to Catholic college teaching tomorrow morning. We're all just monks. No. But yeah, so again, what a wonderful record. So to find out about all things Bill Toms, you go to BillToms.com. Mm-hmm. And all these links will be on the Gonna Die page. BillToms.com, the website. Again, the Pittsburgh release shows, I don't care about you, Columbus, are October 10th. October 20th and 21st. Okay, right. Columbus, you get them until October 13th. But yeah. Well, it's the warm-up release show. It's the soft opening, right?
Yeah.
It's Pittsburgh, Southside, Club Cafe, 1020 and 1021. And that's with the full, English. Everything.
Yeah. We'll get everybody going. Everybody.
All right.
Yes, yes.
Yes. And, of course, you're on Facebook as well. And the record, again, is called Good For My Soul. Got it right this week. Yes. Got it right this podcast. But now I think it's time for the bottom five. The bottom five is a series of questions not related to our main topic, except when they are, I guess, that are of a surrealistic and or philosophical nature. Bill, are you ready?
Oh, man. Go ahead.
All right. Question one. We're getting right to the meat. Talking about writing, talk about struggle, talk about whatever. Of the living villains of history, whose obituary would you most like to write? Living villains right now that are messing up the world for everybody else.
Oh, man.
Or it could be concept record. It could be concept. I'll give you concept record, though. You are a poet, too, so let's talk about that sometime on this podcast. Living villains of history.
Who's that are still living today.
Still living, still messing things up for people today.
Oh, my gosh.
There's so many, aren't there?
Ted Nugent.
Oh, you went there. Love it. Thank you. Yes. Yes. Ted Nugent. Poor Ted. Not really.
Yeah,
but
I don't know. I mean, it's just...
He's a lost soul.
Yeah, I don't know where that, you know... He didn't take enough drugs. I think that's the issue. He's so wound up, he should have... When he was back with the...
Amboy
Dukes, yeah, he should have smoked more pot. But
anyways, he should have taken the advice of his own album title, Journey to the Center of Your Mind, just did it. And now, he's broken humanity. And talk about that hyper competitiveness, too.
Yeah, and don't you find those competitive people like that are the ones that are just, have no compassion?
Yeah.
You know, those are the ones that just seem to be a little bit more selfish, a little self-centered.
Yeah.
You know? But anyways, I don't know the man personally, but just what I...
Just what trickles through the media. Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because, you know, they were talking... was it Seth Rogen was talking? there was an article, who was it, that said about how, you know, why comedy seems to be left wing, and the person said, well, that's because, you know, struggle, right? He's like, the guy was saying, you know, you look at somebody like Mike Pence, and probably a Ted Nugent too, they probably struggle every day, but their representation of themselves is somehow this inhuman, like they have to become inhuman to go out in public or whatever. Oh, I'm just perfect and wonderful, and I'm the greatest, biggest, strongest, and talk about it. Talk about love versus infatuation. That's infatuation with the self.
Exactly.
All right, question two. Semi-related as well. So there are a lot of heaven and hell themes on this record. Mm-hmm. Other songs, you know, I'm Going Home. I think it's In a Certain Way, Into the Storm. I'm Not Gonna Be Sad Anymore. What's that song called? Hard to Say Goodbye is there. And I'm Sad No More. All of the heaven and hell. But if we be strictly Catholic for a moment, what would your idea of purgatory be like? Ah, but you think Rob writing a song about purgatory, huh?
I'm not Catholic.
You're not Catholic, but I'm just putting that out there. What would your idea of purgatory be like?
You know, that in the middle thing, you mean?
Yeah, that in the middle thing. Now, so in Dante's Heaven and Hell, technically purgatory is heaven. It's just not the nice part.
Oh.
In the Divine Comedy, there are no gates to heaven from purgatory, because technically you're already in there. It's just, you know, you're going to suffer for like 500 years. And then you're cool.
But time doesn't matter, right, when you're dead.
Yeah,
I don't know. That one is beyond me. I don't... Probably, eating fast food every day for 100 years would be purgatory.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I don't know.
No, that would be suffering.
It's almost like you say, well, it tastes good, but it's like the devil's eating at your brain or something. I don't know.
Yeah, it tastes good, but it's so... No, that's perfect. It tastes good, but it's so unfulfilling.
Right.
Love it. Right. Yes, eating fast food every day for 100 years. All right. Question three. They're just getting weirder. Actually, no. They just get weirder. Sorry.
Oh, good.
Sorry, Bill. Question three. Okay, this comes with a premise, right? You got to follow me through the premise. Okay, so we're living in a dystopian future. Granted, not the dystopian future that we're living in now, because the future ain't what it used to be. And the only books to survive in this dystopian future would be those bound in human skin. Would you offer up your flesh, you know, kind of walk a book down to the tannery yourself? What book what book would you donate your skin for? And also, you can't say the Bible, the Quran, or the complete works of Shakespeare. Mm-hmm. Somebody already did those. Yeah. Those are safe. But what else would you say sacrifice your being that, you know, or this book would not survive for future generations of humanity?
Wow. That's interesting. I would say the works of Carl Sandburg. Maybe that would be it. Because I think...
No, that would be hot. Yeah, that's a good
that
one.
That needs to
live, yeah. Yeah. It would get a poet of... Sorry, you're blowing my mind, because that's exactly right, the experiences you're talking about, the poetry of Carl Sandburg that you write about,
Of the working poor.
Yeah.
And what I know about him was that he worked many jobs, many different jobs, you know.
Yeah.
Before he was able to succeed in his writings.
Yeah. It's purely American writings, yeah.
Yeah, he was a great, great historian too.
Mel Tom's Hard Rain, Carl Sandburg. I'm drawing a straight line in my head. That's the best. All right. Question four, we'll get back to maybe a little more normal. Question four, what mundane daily activity gives you the most joy? Mundane daily activity, nothing special thing that you just, everybody's got to do every day. It's kind of good, kind of nice, kind of fun.
I don't want to say that.
But the question five. Question five. Is there a movie that you wish you could live inside, even for a short time? Go on vacation inside of a film for a little bit, or live there. You know, is there a movie world, like almost like Gumby, you know, with the books, but with, you know, DVDs, yeah. Or I guess it would be a Netflix downloadable stream that you could just jump inside and kind of hang out in for a while. Or...
Oh, man. I'm probably not the best person to ask because I don't watch quite as much film as I do reading. But, I guess we'll go back to, The Last Picture Show. You know, I guess we'll go back to that because that to me has always been like, the America that I, you know, that Southwest America, you know, strong women characters floating through there. And, you know, so yeah.
That'd be great. Yes, absolutely. I'm now thinking like, you know. Okay, you've given me a new Powerball fantasy. I don't play Powerball. But it would be like me neither, but you know, I would seriously bring back the patron model. And right. The Bill Toms crew could just like travel the country and make regional records.
Yeah. You can be the soundtrack of
America, right, you know. Right. Wouldn't that be great? But you already are the soundtrack of America in Pittsburgh and Memphis and thank you again so much for doing this.
It was fun. Thank you.
Kids out there again, the new record is entitled Good For My Soul.
Yes, it is. It's
Bill Toms, Hard Rain, and the Soulsville Horns as well.
Soulsville Horns, indeed.
It's a rich, beautiful sound. I'm sure they can get, there'll be a link on BillToms.com.
Yeah.
Where else can people get this other than directly from your hand across the merch table at Club Cafe?
It'll be released through a distributor, so they can
they'll be able to
get it anywhere in all the digital outlets that is available. Yeah,
okay, it'll be, and there are physical CDs.
Yes, there are physical CDs that you
long live physical media.
Yeah, I don't know
it makes
how
it hard
many
to
places
move.
There are to sell it, but they are there. Yes,
yes,
they will be there.
Fantastic.
Amazon and all that stuff as well.
Yes, absolutely. Awesome. So until the next record or until the next thing, thank you so much
Matt,
for doing
thank
this.
Thank you
Anytime.
So much. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. And again, that's about it. Links to all things Bill Toms will be on our website when I post this. So our next episode will eventually happen, and it'll be about something. I don't know.
I can't wait.
I can't either. Me neither. And again, people, you know, the few folks who like this, sometimes I have a nice 5-month unplanned hiatus. Because, the hell with your audience.
School starting, right?
Yeah, school starting. I got young people's minds to mold people.
Right.
Quit hassling me. But actually, I do have a couple things in the works. Our homepage, where you can find new and old episodes, is gunnadiepodcast.com. We're speaking of digital outlets, we're also on iTunes. Follow us on Twitter at Gonna Die Podcast, and We're All Gonna Die is on Facebook. Later, meets.